Put aside the ego and embrace the moment.
That's not the moment that you're embracing right now.
Oh, dear.
Regardless, it's time for another midweek drive transcontinental adventure.
A non-stop flight from Honolulu to Chicago, a quick stop at the airport bookstore, and Carrie Lynn Webb discovered her love for romance. We'll find out a wee bit more about that over the course of the next 30 or so minutes, because yes, amazingly enough, Carrie Lynn Webb is with us in the Author of the Week feature today. How are you, Carrie Lynn Webb?
I'm doing well, thank you.
Excellent. Now, the great news is, of course, you're in South Carolina. And of course, Jessica Bertus, who's just with us now, is in North Carolina. It's like, you know, Carolina on our mind. How are you, Jessica?
I'm doing pretty well. How is everyone?
I think we're okay, because keeping the British end up as ever, we have in Norwich, England, Rebecca Bond. How are you, Rebecca?
Hi, I'm very well, thank you. How is everyone?
Marvelous. Now, romance, Carrie, I'm probably not the target audience for this, but I love the website in terms of how you structured your own magical world. And we'll talk about the Thanksgiving anthology, Thankfully in Love, in a few moments. But share with us some of it. So, I mean, that little teaser that we had in terms of your nonstop flight from Honolulu to Chicago, was that, I mean, if you'd gone, for instance, I don't know, to Alaska, could you have ended up being a horror fan, a writer or something?
It's possible. I just needed a book to read. I think I was just running into the, you know, you're running by and you just grab something quick. And if I remember correctly, it was a Joanna Lindsay. Picked it up, read it, and went, oh, I love this. I love this. And so I was headed back to see family. And that's how it started, my love of romance. And then read just everything I could get my hands on and started writing romance later.
And what is the key to a successful romance? I mean, we've had in the past when we featured romantic authors, they said, well, it's not a love story, because a love story usually has a tragic ending and a romance usually has a happy ending. Is it as simple as that?
Well, I guess I never heard that before, because I call it a love story or a romance. I think they're all the same. I think a romance just in general is the love story. It is about two people finding each other and falling in love. And it isn't even necessarily the books have a happily ever after, but we all know in real life, love is not easy and it's complicated and there's all kinds of stuff. We don't get to show you all that on the page, but it's them finding their person that they're going to take that journey with. Right. So, and as a romance, it has to end with happily ever after, where I'm not saying that their life was perfect from there on out, but you know, they were willing to fall in love and be there for each other for all of it, the ups and downs and goods and bad.
So it's love, laughter, and romance, all three in one. Fantastic. Let's just coordinate ourselves geographically, because Jessica, whereabouts in North Carolina are you? And do you actually, I mean, there isn't a kind of bias here, because I mean, obviously, I know it's Carolina. I'd hate to find we've got, you know, North versus South here. So, you know, just talk us through your own base, Jessica.
I'm in Boone right now, so I'm pretty far from the...
And she's frozen already,
border,
you say?
But, often I'm about...
Sorry,
I'm about 5 minutes from the border. Sorry?
Yeah, we just missed you slightly there. You said you're 5 minutes from the border. Is that correct?
Usually when I go home from school, I'm 5 minutes from the border. There's a park near me where they have a line straight down the middle. It's Carowinds, and it's North and South Carolina, so you can be standing in both Carolinas at the same time.
So on that basis, Carrie, whereabouts are you in terms of the border? Let's just get this addressed
I'm in Aiken, South Carolina. So I'm down by the Augusta, Georgia border. So I'm lower. So where are you at school, Jessica?
I'm in Boone. I'm up in the Appalachian Mountains.
Okay, my daughter is going to go to Lees McRae in Banner Elk.
Yeah, that's so close. Yeah. That's just one of us.
Okay, yeah, she'll be there. She'll be a freshman in the fall.
That's awesome. Oh, it's so cool hearing this.
We deliberately coordinate this, Carrie, with Nikki, obviously, to ensure that you get a sort of, it works the whole process through. Anyway, Jessica, any questions that you'd like to put to Carrie about life, romance, and such like?
Well, I have to say, I loved hearing about how your grandparents had such a beautiful romance for so long. I thought that was absolutely beautiful. Do they inspire you usually when you write each book, just looking at their relationship?
My grandparents just inspired me in life in general. They held hands into their 90s. They held hands in the nursing home when they were both in there together. It was really a timeless love story for the ages. And they were just adorable. And so, yeah, they had just in, like I said, in life in general, I remember falling asleep. My grandparents at the time, they had moved their bedroom downstairs for mobility issues. And I slept on the couch in the family room. And I remember listening to my grandfather say his prayers. And he said them out loud. But my grandmother was first every single night. And it was just so touching. And they were just adorable. And he would just, you know, look at me and I won the prize when I won your grandmother. And he'd wink. And it was just a really lovely love story. And I grew up with that. And so, and my parents now have been married almost 60 years. So, and my other set of grandparents, same thing, married a really long time. And so I just really strong marriages have been surrounded by them and seen the good, the bads, all of that, and still that they come through it and they're stronger for it.
I mean, following on from that, Rebecca, would you like to add anything in terms of quizzing and so on?
Yeah, definitely. So with romance, is it the happy ending that draws you to it? Because I must admit, I love a twist and a bit of a, you know, sad ending sometimes if it, you know, really brings something to the book. Is it the happy ending that makes you love romance so much, or what is it about it?
No, it's the journey. It is the actual journey of falling in love that draws me to it, not necessarily that happy ending at the end. And in some of my books, I have endings where there are secondary characters that aren't redeemed, because in real life, we know that in real life, there's just people that aren't redeemable and they're not going to change. And you have to kind of accept that. But the love story, and it's the falling in love, and it's finding sort of almost all of my books actually are written. These characters are not setting out to fall in love. That's not their journey in life. They're not looking for love. They're not saying, I need a boyfriend. I need a man. I need a girl in my life to make me whole. They're on a journey doing something else, and love sort of happens to them along the way. And that's what's always drawn me to romance. It's that piece when this surprising person comes into your life when you weren't looking. And then they're there and you're dealing with that, and you're dealing with whatever it is in your personal journey that you're trying to go through too. So yeah, it's just since I write romance, they have to end happily ever after. So you can't, readers get very upset when we don't have a happy ending and, you know, at the end.
Yeah, I love that though, because I think it's realistic. And as you say, it isn't this fairy tale story all the time. There are ups and downs, you know, it's a journey. And I think it's nice that you reflect that.
Yeah.
And is it a case, Carrie, that in these current pandemic-based times, you're working on a whole range of Zoom-based romances and so on, and you sort of open that up? Because, you know, City by the Bay stories could have a whole new world if you just have social distance.
They could have a whole, and I've had several different people say, you should write, you know, several of my doctors. And I'm like, it's really hard to write a romance when you don't have all the nuances of people together in the same room. You know, the eyes across the room, the accidental grabbing someone's hand, the just sort of brushing, you know, when you have the social distancing piece, it adds a whole new level of, I have kind of steered away from that, but I have heard that there are authors that are working on social distancing romances. And I have seen some lovely stories on the news that I found super inspiring about, you know, neighbors sort of connecting, you know, via Zoom or you know, social distancing and finding each other. So that that actually inspires me, because I think that when you are forced to communicate and just talk, my husband and I went through years where he was one place and I was another place, and you have to talk. And when you're forced to talk, you really learn a lot about each other. You know, in different ways. So I think it's a good thing.
Well, there are certain romances where the male just grunts, but that's a different line entirely. So obviously not yours, Scary. That's the key thing.
No.
And speaking about, obviously, the Zoom scenario, Jessica's having a challenge with the frozen Zoom, but hopefully she'll still be with us. Jessica, anything else you'd like to throw in at this stage?
So I saw your books are set in different places, and I was curious how you kind of decide where to set a book, and do you ever set any in South Carolina out of curiosity?
Funny you should mention mention that. Let's see, San Francisco, I used to live there. It's one of my favorite cities in the world. I really like London too, I have to say, but love San Francisco. So decided that at the time I started writing that series, there was a lot of small town stories set in, you know, small town USA and small town places. And I decided, why can't we have the small town kind of atmosphere, a community atmosphere, but in the city? Because there's a lot of people who live in cities and love cities and they're raising their kids in cities. And why can't we do that? And so that's where the inspiration for San Francisco came from. The Blackwell series that we write is a Western series, and there's five of us in that, and we sort of came up with that city together and kind of built that. I'm writing a Western series now with Heartwarming that's set in a small town in Texas, just because I like Texas and the Panhandle. I do have an idea, actually, for a new series, a contemporary romance series set actually in a city just like Banner Elk. So that I'm taking my inspiration from Banner Elk, loved it up there. It reminded me a lot of Lake Tahoe, beautiful country. And I was like, this could be a really good, have a paranormal series that's set kind of in Hawaii because I grew up there. So yeah, just sort of places that inspire me. And like I said, the city was important because I love big cities. There's just a different vibe to big cities. And I just thought, you know, we can have romances and we can have communities of people that gather together in a big city. So that's kind of how I came around to those. And then in Thankfully in Love, that one, that was a vacation one. I'm looking because we have a Mother's Day anthology coming out with Ark Manor 2, and we came up with a town for them as well. In it's called Seaglass Bay in California. So it's kind of fun just in, you know, kind of figuring out what cities you like and what you want to base your sort of town off of.
So it's interesting, Carrie, whenever you mention Hawaii 5-0, whenever he mentions Hawaii, I think Hawaii 5-0, and I reach for my Steve McGarrett original series mug there, because always classic, you know.
It's vastly
underrated, and I think sort of the classic better than the remake. But that's what I thought. And of course, there's Magnum PI as well. I mean, it's great.
They're all so good. Well, when we lived there, we used to take people by the houses, you know, where Magna P.I. lived. And, you know, those were like, let's sort of like a Hollywood, let's go stop by over there. So classic shows, and they were fantastic.
Exactly. And of course, full of romance. You got Tom Selleck, you got Jack Lord, although Jack Lord perhaps not known for his romantic elements, but there were certain episodes in which actually he did almost shed a tear. Montana Wedding, of course, and The Rancher's Rescue are part of the Blackwell continuity series. And Arkman anthologies, as you mentioned. Talk us through Thankfully in Love. I mean, because I mean, obviously, we look at Your Good Self. I mean, Anna Stewart and Kayla and Melinda, all good authors, but ultimately, people are going to buy it because it's got Carrie Lynn Webb on the title. Let's be honest, you know?
Yeah, let's be honest. No. I got invited in. Leslie Robin, who is the editor, is phenomenal. And they wanted to put together Thanksgiving anthology set around Thanksgiving, and she sort of let us come up with our ideas and we all ran with it. And then in our Mother's Day one, those stories are going to be more connected. Everybody's from the same town and the characters are all friends, and so those ones will kind of lace through nicely. But this was a really fun collection. I'm looking at the cover now, and I apologize because I just literally turned in one book last week and I have switched hit and I'm into another one. And so I'm like looking back going, oh wait, since I have turned in and done Thankfully in Love, there's been about three other books that have come since, and your head gets into the one that you're working on at the moment.
I'm sensing an awful lot of coordination and organization here in terms of, I sense lots of charts and lots of things to actually say, no, that character's in that book, that one's in this one, where are we going to go?
Yeah, well, funny you mentioned that, because just a couple of weeks ago, while I was finishing up my current one, we were putting together a proposal. We were working on another Blackwell series, and I was pulling Blackwell information and putting it in the book I was working on. And I was like, this is the wrong, like, I'm not even, this is wrong. It's calling the towns wrong. It got a little confusing there. So then I backed off and was like, okay, we have to finish one and then we can work on the other one. So yeah.
That makes sense.
Lots of spreadsheets. It's lots of Excel spreadsheets.
Yeah, you see, that's high technology at work to obviously sort out the work of the modern romantic writer. It's fantastic. Rebecca, back to yourself.
Yeah, so when I was checking out your website, I noticed a tweet from about November time, and you expressed the importance to connect with other writers, even though it might maybe via Zoom nowadays. Why do you think it's important to connect with other writers, and what advice would you give to any writers listening?
I can tell you that Melinda Curtis and Anna J. Stewart, who are with me in the Ark Manor, those are my writing, they're my writing people, my writing tribe. We have been together. We started as critique partners years ago. And first it was kind of just a like friends thing. And then we decided, hey, we should get serious about this writing thing. And then we started keeping each other accountable, and we would meet each week. And you'd have to turn in 10 pages that you wrote. And so you wrote your 10 pages because they were turning in their 10 pages. And over the years, we developed just a phenomenal, we could tell each other anything, and just a really nice, honest group. And we're super close friends. And I think that this writing journey has really, really big ups and really, really big downs. And it is really nice to have people in your corner who, when you lose faith, they're right there saying, no, 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 you've got this. You can push through. There are, I wrote one book when my daughter was in and out of the ER. I wrote another book when we were going through a family crisis. Melinda, we've all gone through stuff while you're writing through it, and you need those people behind you saying, we've got your back, whatever you need. And whether it's just a text of, oh my gosh, I just, you know, you start a book and you're all excited and you're like, yes, I love this. And halfway through, inevitably you go, I can't write. I'm not sure. And I have 17 books out, and every time I'm like, but I don't know why I thought I could do this. And then you have these people that sweep in behind you and just sort of pick you up and go, you're fine. You know, it's just writer doubt. You know, every book is personal to all of us as we've written it. It's sort of your baby, and then you're going to put it out in the world. And then people, you know, say things about it and your feelings get hurt, just all that kind of stuff. And I think building friendships with writers is important because they know, because they're on the same journey as you. And it's not let me compare myself to them. Let me, you know, I'm not doing what they're doing. I'm not as successful as them. They've had more books than me. It's just that person that has your back. And writers are really great like that. And so I would recommend anybody who's starting out to find good friends that are writers and people that you trust implicitly, that you can give your work to. And they aren't going to say, oh, this is great, because they know you and they don't want to hurt your feelings, right? Because feelings. Your feelings do get hurt when someone says, and Anna and Melinda have told me straight out, I cannot stand your character. And you're like, oh my gosh. Like, you know, and then, yeah, so you've got to, but you grow a nice thick skin and you get better. You're better for it, just better in general. So yeah, if you are an aspiring writer, please get people that you can go through, like I said, through the journey with. And I'm so grateful that I have them.
I think that's great advice, because I think other people inspire each other as well. So as you say, when you're having, you know, hard periods in your life, or you might have writer's block, I think people bring that out of each other. So I think that's really, really good advice.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Right. So when you are stuck, and we have a lot of times in my acknowledgements, I'll say, thanks for answering my text. I mean, there are SOS texts that go out all the time. I'm stuck. I wrote myself into a corner. I don't know what happens now. This seems cliche. And then people can just, you know, throw ideas back at you and you go, oh, okay, I think I can finish now. Yeah.
I love the phrase you use there, writer's doubt. It sounds so much more happy than writer's block, really. Writer's doubt, kind of like pondering. Sure. Yeah. Jessica, from your own writing, because obviously you've got your dissertation and all the rest of the bits and pieces that you're working through, but from your own writing, does this sort of suggest a way forward for your first novel when you start producing it in the next few months?
Yes, and I'm excited to have you in my dedication. Giving me some advice.
Well, feel free to, what are you writing? Feel free to email me offline. Ooh. Or yeah, and for anything you need, absolutely.
Thank you. Thank you. That's amazing.
Yeah.
It's the joy of the Midweek Drive Network series, or as we like to call it, co-creating by Zoom. It's marvelous. Yeah. In terms of your own reading habits, do you ever sort of think, I've had enough of this romance, I'm going to read a nice thriller, you know, for changing, or I want to actually read a historical factual sort of thing and so on, or a biography?
Yeah, I so right now I'm reading, it's actually Amanda's Quicks. They're still in the romance genre, but they are more mystery based and romantic suspense based right now. And they're set in the 1930s. And I'm just plowing through those because right now they're just sort of hitting that spot of, this is awesome. There's all these killings going on. There's people dying and there's, you know, they're suicidal and they're psychotic and everything that I don't have in my books. And so, yeah, so I'm reading that now. I've gone through a period where I've read a lot of science fiction and fantasy. Love, love, love all things paranormal. You know, give me a good a witch, a demon, a devil, a vampire, I'm in. Love the world building of that in the in. A historical romance speaks to my heart every single day. Just if you take me back to medieval, if you take me back to Regency, those are, yeah. So I stick a lot to the romance genre and I'll pop out. And my other just thing that I love to bake. And so I love looking at recipes. If I'm just letting my mind wander and sort of mulling over plot stuff, you can usually find me looking through blogs and reading through blogs on what's new to cook and the new looking for new things.
Is there a Great American Bake Off Challenge? I mean, it's a big thing in Britain, actually, the Great Bake Off Challenge. I mean, is there equivalent in the States as yet? Or do you have to go to BBC America for that or something?
No, I watch yours. Watch yours and love it. Yes. And so yeah,
Mary Berry rules, basically.
Yeah, pretty much.
Still sorted through that. Unbelievable. I must admit, when I was looking at Montana Wedding and the Rancher's Rescue, and in terms of the romance of that, you're talking about that one text which I watched recently, and I know Rebecca will be seeing this as well shortly, is the Tom Hanks movie News of the World, which is, that's a heart-rending romance, I feel, in so many ways, but that's another line. And do you think, again, there's obviously a place with respect to the Western four romance to work its way in together with your wonderful line of love, laughter, and romance, presumably?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So yeah, in our but if we're talking Western romance, that I have a Western series. I actually just turned the first book in for that one. That'll be more cowboy Western leaning. The first one will be out in September. So I'm coming out of San Francisco for a little while and heading to the ranches.
Well, Honolulu, San Francisco, of course, now South Carolina. But given the Carolina Collection, and Jess will obviously maintain this, one of the things we've been constantly asking ever since Jessica introduced it to us in a seminar group before we actually hit the pandemic last year when she was over in Lincoln, England, is sweet tea, Carrie. Are you a sweet tea aficionado, or is it a case of what is this strange thing of which you speak?
My husband is a sweet tea person, and he does a lot of the half and half, half sweet tea, half unsweetened. We learned it when we got here. Like I said, I lived all over when I was little, and we moved a lot. And then this was our first sort of into the South move for both of us. So he is a sweet tea. I drink, which is sitting right here, I drink a ton of hot tea. As it turns out, this is a sweet mint tea. But my tea is out of England, actually. So I get.
If it's not England, it's China. It's one of those two things. They're the sort of key aspects when it comes to tea in general.
Yeah. So I order mine from Harrogate, and they have the best. So I get the big boxes of it. Yeah.
Not Betty's Tea Room in Harrogate, surely.
No.
Yeah, that's okay. But anyway, I know Harrogate well. We often do sort of location reports there with the Great Yorkshire Show. Anyway, enough of such tea matters. Jessica, any other thoughts from yourself?
Sorry, Zoom was freezing me for a second. So are you trying to kind of branch out with your own reading? I know you said you were reading a lot more like thriller. Do you also like watch television? When you watch television, do you focus a lot on romance, or do you tend to just watch? Completely no.
No, I watch a lot of right now, well, like I said, it's a lot of the cooking channel and it's a lot of the DIY channels. Love like The Rookie. I've been watching that recently. I'm gonna watch Bridgerton. I was trying to come off deadline before I actually watched that whole series, but watched Stranger Things with my daughter and loved that. My both daughters watched Criminal Minds the entire rewatched some of that with them. Yeah, so my TV watching is a little more eclectic, you know. I do watch all of the Hallmark Channel movies. I like those, find those inspiring. But I like the Hallmark mysteries too. So yeah.
It's like, no matter the genre, there's usually a romance in anything. There's always something.
They do say that, right? So, you know, Lord of the Rings is a classic one where they added in the romance to draw in the, you know, to draw in a wider range of audience. Oh. So you do hear that a lot in the Hollywood set, that when they can bring in that kind of line, it pulls through better, I guess. For me, I just like a good romance.
And thankfully, In Love, of course, will be around again for USA Today best-selling romance authors, as we've said. That has been released, of course, thankfully, In Love. Looking at the way that things are actually going, if the call comes from Netflix or Amazon Prime and they actually say, Carrie, we'd like to actually start adapting some of your work, which one would you say is most cinematic? Which one would you actually say, well, ultimately, I'd go for a City by the Bay story, or would you go for the Blackwell Montana wedding system? Would it be Thankfully Enough? Would it be the Christmas Town stories, or would it even be the classic Make Me a Match?
Oh yeah, let's see, the Christmas Town stories I could see going up on the Hallmark, just the town and the building around those. They're kind of like evergreens. Hallmark has an evergreen series. They're similar, I think, in that kind of vein. I was just thinking the other day, I think probably one of my City by the Bay stories. I really think the, and I'm blanking on the title now. I just wrote one, Three Makes a Family, that's coming out in April, but it's actually her surprise engagement that is the sports one with the quarterback. And it's a fake wedding scenario. I think
a
that
fake wedding scenario.
Yeah. they're pretending to be married. And those are just a lot of fun. And I think it could be a fun film, actually.
Okay, well, we'll put it out there. CarrieLeanWebb, of course, .com is the initial go-to website from that point of view. Presumably, are you a keen Instagram follower? Do you actually sort of, together with your family, actually regularly go for TikTok and actually do Carrie Lynn Webb dances? I mean, any thoughts on that? Or is it just a case of, no, we'll keep it straight onto the CarrieLeanWebb.com website?
Yeah, I'm on social media, and my daughter is, I have a 16-year-old and an 18-year-old, and they are very well versed on Instagram and all of that. And they want me on there more. And I'm like, I just don't get it. And so I need more help.
You and
with
me
that.
Both, Carrie. It's a strange world, Instagram, right? Honestly. Where, oh, you know, what's it all about, basically? Yeah. Right. Followers, tweeters, tweets? Where are we? However.
Oh, yeah, right. I'm everywhere. I'm on Twitter. I have a Facebook page. I'm on Instagram. You can find me in all those places. if I don't get back to you, it's not personal. My Gmail account.
You're writing. You're too busy writing. You know, quite frankly, you need to have a virtual sign which says "Genius at work." It's nothing personal. You know, that's all you need. Your snap line, bumper sticker. Moving dexterously onwards, I think in terms of the Carolina stuff, I'm very tempted to actually go out with a musical piece with James Taylor and Carolina on my mind. Do you think that would be acceptable, Carrie? Would you be happy with that?
I think it would be fabulous.
Yeah, that's okay. Well, that's what we'll get to. But before we reach that, Rebecca's got two critical questions to ask you. I mean, these are actually sort of fundamental to the whole essence of the piece. Rebecca, over to you.
Yes, Carrie, have you had an enjoyable Zoom with us today?
Oh, it was fabulous. Thanks for having me, by the way. Yes, this is
no,
really
thank
lovely.
You for thank you for being on the show. Can we welcome you back again?
Absolutely, I would love that. Yeah, thanks.
Excellent. And Carrie Lynn Webb, we definitely sort of endorse all the goodness that's actually there. Any plans? I mean, I know it's difficult at these pandemic times. Any plans to actually travel to Europe in the near future? Maybe pick up on some original tea from Harrogate or something? Is that sort of the things you're talking about?
You guys are on my list. That's where, if we head back, that's where we're headed to. So like I said, I don't know. I think I said it before. I can't tell you how much I love London. I love England.
Speaking on behalf of the University of Lincoln, we really don't mind about London, but what the hey, it's there, it's the capital. So we'll run with it. That's okay.
I like all just everywhere in England. So if I can come back, yes.
And Norwich has got a lot going for it, as well as Harrogate and all of those other factors. So it's all great.
We'd love to see you.
Right, Carrie Lynn Webb, Rebecca Bond, and of course the Zoom freezing, Jessica Burtis. Honestly, Jessica, we're going to have to address these whole things. I blame it's the sweet tea you put into the computer, but never mind. Huge thanks. Keep on keeping on, and we'll speak again very soon.
Thank you so much.
In my mind, I'm gone to Carolina. Can't you see the sunshine? Can't you just feel the moonshine? Ain't it just like a friend of mine to hit me from behind? Yes, I'm gone to Carolina in my mind. Karen, she's the silver sun. You best walk her away and watch it shining. Watch her watch the morning come. A silver tear appearing now, I'm crying. Feel the moonshine. Ain't it just like a friend of mine to hit me from behind? Yes, I'm gone to Carolina in my mind. Dark and silent late last night, I think I might have heard the highway calling. Geese in flight and dogs at bite. Signs, it might be omens, say I'm going, I'm gone to Carolina in my mind. With a holy host of others standing around me, still I'm on the dark side of the moon. And it seems like it goes on like this forever. You must forgive me if I'm up and gone to Carolina in my mind. In my mind, I'm gone to Carolina. Can't you see the sunshine? Can't you just feel the moonshine? Ain't it just like a friend of mine? From behind, yes, I'm gone to Carolina in my mind. Gone to Carolina in my mind, and I'm gone to Carolina in my mind. Gone to Carolina.
Now, one of the most disappointing aspects of the recent pandemic has been the finding that the over 70s have been found to be more at risk of theft by family and friends during the whole COVID experience, with a quarter of over 70s suffering financial abuse and over half feeling that they're more exposed during COVID. So to begin to address this, we're delighted to welcome two fabulous individuals. First of all, the co-founder at Guardian Card, who created the business of Guardian Card after experiencing financial abuse himself, Nick Thompson. How are you, Nick?
I'm great, Alex. Thank you very much. And a good morning to you.
Excellent. And we also have the awesomely talented broadcasting legend, Jenny Bond, of course. Jenny, welcome to your good self. How are you?
Hi. Fine, thank you.
Excellent. Now, Jenny, if we can turn to you initially first, because you obviously looked after your mother's finance during her own battle with dementia. Can you just share with us your own experiences with respect to that? Because obviously you must have been quite shocked to find this particular finding about a number of people who don't have that good fortune and having somebody like yourself look after them and actually are doing unfortunate instances with them.
Well, yeah, this research does show that, yeah, as you say, a quarter of people questioned suffered financial abuse, people over 70. And I don't want to patronise the over 70s. I'm 70, my husband's 81. But I think you do get more anxious as you get older. Perhaps you're not as tech savvy. And certainly my mother was both anxious and not at all tech savvy. And her anxiety about financial affairs was really almost the beginning of her dementia, the obvious beginnings that she would hide her handbag all around the house, because in her failing mind she knew that what she had to do was protect the money that she had, and that was represented by her handbag. And then we would spend hours, my sisters and I, going through her bank statements with her, because she was so frightened that it would all disappear. And of course, all too often that can indeed be the case with the financial scamming that is going on now, left, right and center. I'm sure you get all sorts of emails and communications which are scams, which are very easy to fall for.
Yeah, I mean, this is one of the negative sides of obviously our connected society, and with respect to so much being reliant upon technology, these things happen. And I can understand 70% of those over 70 say that falling victim to financial abuse is their biggest worry, which again has obviously been exasperated by the COVID system that we've been enduring. Nick, if I can turn to your good self, I mean, were you surprised by these findings? Were you shocked? I mean, again, you've also sort of experienced this with your own family. Is it just a case of, well, you know, what do? We shrug our shoulders and we say, this is horrendous.
Well, was I surprised? Yes. Was I shocked? Yes. But actually, you know, what I experienced with my mother-in-law showed really either end of the spectrum. So on one hand, you know, she was almost being parted company with, you know, the price of a property. And on the other hand, it's just, you know, silly little things where people are asking to borrow money, people are asking for gifts. And so, you know, the experience I had with my mother-in-law covered the entire spectrum and the range of it. And it was that which kind of, along with my colleague Aidan, you know, we thought, well, we want to do something about this. And so, you know, what we came up with Guardian Card is something that will make it easier for us to care for our loved ones and offer a high degree of financial security. And really to take away the stress. And, you know, it is tiring helping to look after a loved one. And, you know, so just to make it easier.
And Jenny, returning back to yourself again, looking at some of the signs of financial abuse. I mean, not having enough money. Well, OK, I can understand that. Having unusual difficulty with finances, not paying bills, not having the normal home comforts. Are those all, in a sense, red flags that people should be wary of or indeed look out for in terms of if they feel that they know somebody or have somebody within the family who is likely to be suffering financial abuse?
Yeah, I think, you know, talking is what it's all about, actually, talking to one another, just reassuring people. I think a lot of people, as they get older, find this new financial world of online banking and apps and God knows what, you know, very bewildering. And checkbooks of something, you know, if you get a checkbook out, you're thought of absolutely as ancient and what on earth you're doing. In this cashless society, it is confusing. So you've got to look out for signs of confusion and anxiety and help the best you can. And I must say, you know, a card like this would really have helped us, my sisters and I, when we were looking after mother. And I think it's beneficial not only to the person who has the card and who can still retain control of how much money is spent, because you can put your own limits on it, where it's used, when it's used, by whom it is used, but also for the carer, because when we had carers in to look after mother, we had to entrust them with money. Thank goodness we had the most wonderful people, and we just left envelopes of cash for them to help themselves. But that's not always the case. And I think for a carer to be given this is a secure debit card, it gives peace of mind both to them. There's a trust, a bond, using my own name, a trust between the carer and the person who for whom they're caring, and the whole family unit, that's very reassuring.
And Nick, presumably you would endorse everything that Jenny's just said there, because that's really at the heart of the whole thing, the T word, trust.
Absolutely. And, you know, while we were designing it, we came up with three S words, which was safe. You know, so we've designed Guardian Card to be a safety valve that limits the exposure for people. But unlike other cards where, you know, if you lend your card to a family member or a friend to do the shopping, technically it's fraud and you haven't got any of the protection that you would normally enjoy. With Guardian Card, we allow people to give cards or allocate cards to a family member, to a carer, and then they can track the spend on those cards, and they can be physical or even a virtual card that just sits on the mobile phone. Well, we made it secure, so it has all the functionality of a MasterCard, but with total control, transparency, availability to block transactions, get instant notifications, and just make everything visible. So as Jenny said, it's important that you talk and have communication. So what we wanted to do was create visibility that so any part of the family that's involved can see things as they happen. And then, yeah, we wanted to make it really simple and straightforward, so it's easy to use, easy to manage, easy to control. And then what we did was we said, right, well, you know, money isn't about 9 till 5, Monday to Friday. So our team is on call 7 days a week, 8 till 8. And then we monitor online channels throughout the night. In fact, we had somebody sign on with us at 2 a.m. the other morning. You know, so we're there to kind of help people. But, yeah, you know, we tried to make it safe, secure, simple, so that you could have that trust.
There are, of course, lots of agencies that people can go to seek help, adult social services, GPs, of course, domestic abuse helplines and so on. But Jenny, I think the key thing comes back to that communications factor, that we really need to ensure that within our society, people can actually communicate and talk about cards. Because I do know from my own experience with respect to banking, sometimes one gets somewhat tired of having to constantly wait for calls to be put through and all sorts of other bits and pieces. Telephone banking is a challenge at the best of times.
It is. I must admit, I leave it to my husband. He's brilliant at all that. Yes, I just go out and work. He does all the rest of it. But I think one of the key messages I'd like to put across is don't allow yourself to be rushed. I think scammers would always try and, you know, urgently make you open a link or do something. Don't do that. Stop. Think. If it's really genuine and they really want you to do something and it's authoritative, then they will come back to you.
Absolutely. That time to actually reflect and not be rushed into things in a society which seems to be getting quicker and quicker by the day. But maybe that's just my advancing years. And as I say,
it is.
We're just chronologically gifted. That's all. Nick, how can people get in touch with your good self at Guardian Cards to find out more details about what we've been chatting about today?
So our website is www.guardiancard.co.uk. And it sets out the whole story. And as Jenny said, it's there so that people can just take that time to think about it, to look at it. And it is an important decision. And that's why we put it on the website, so people can take the time over it.
Many thanks. That's brilliant. Jake Thompson from, of course, Guardian Card and, of course, key Hull City supporter, which is wonderful. And Jenny Bond, of course, ace broadcaster extraordinaire. One of these days, Jenny, I must put you together with one of our other regular co-respondents, Angela Rippon, on the Midweek Drive. That'll be a dream team. You know, we'll have to work on
that. Oh, Ange. Dear old Ange. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. But to both Jenny Bond and Nick Thompson, huge thanks. And stay safe and be well.
Thank you. And you too, Alex.
Well, it's still a case of homeschooling is in action, even though it might well bring out a case of cold sweats and a whole variety of parental issues and so on. But we are approaching that anniversary, the 1 year anniversary of homeschooling occurring. And how's it impacted in terms of both parents and children? Well, recent research by Currys and PC World has suggested some interesting factors, but we're delighted to welcome with her own perspective on the whole thing, Principal Lecturer at the Department of Psychology at Liverpool Hope University, the wonderful Lorna Bourke. How are you, Lorna?
Very well, thank you.
Good. So, Lorna, again, it's, as we said, nearly the 1 year anniversary of lockdown. Has homeschooling improved? Has the tech got better? Are people more used to dealing with the whole things? Is it a case of we now know what a Zoom is, or we know what Microsoft Teams actually are?
Yes, I think we've obviously become a lot more adept and we've had to work at quite a fast pace to do that and feel very proud of ourselves about how much we've learned in that time. But I think it is still quite a very unnatural thing for people to be homeschooling their children. They probably just feel that they've, you know, dedicated so much energy and time to thinking about it and making sure that their children are as on track as they can possibly make them. So there's going to be a fatigue for sure. And we need to be able to support families through the next stage in terms of their children's learning.
Traditionally, of course, you've almost had that golden triangle in an ideal world and a balanced partnership between students or the pupils, their parents, and of course the school environment as well. And you know, obviously, when the attendance of school has actually changed and adjusted, that's impacted very much on life. Different subjects have presumably also had different impacts. I mean, the STEM subjects, science, technology, engineering, and mathematics. Whilst the basics might be understood by most parents, it's fair to say that if you're suddenly asked to explain how, concave and convex lenses work in Newtonian light physics, you might be struggling a bit.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's okay to be struggling. That's an important part of learning as well. Luckily, we have got, you know, a lot of options open to us in terms of trying to find out information. But at the same time, you can only do what you can do. And that's something that the children can look forward to when they get back to school. And in particular, getting back into using labs and, you know, practical hands-on activities, which a lot of the STEM subjects are missing out on. But, you know, you can do things at home. You can think about how you use materials, for example, and, you know, try a few experiments yourself. And if things don't work, I mean, obviously within reason.
And there is, of course, a case of having to balance out education and education as being fun and so on with, of course, using technology for your own work as well. I mean, I don't know if we're beginning to address the notion of obviously the digital divide and lack of computing technology in homes, etc., and poor broadband schemes and so on. But that also presumably adds to the stress of homeschooling.
Absolutely. And I think that's one thing that isn't just about the pandemic. It's obviously lifted a lid on that divide. And we as a society, and that's businesses, government, education, we all need to work together to ensure children have the tools for their learning. In terms of parents and sharing the tech, that's really, really challenging. And I think it is about working out the priorities as best you can for that day and making the best use of sometimes small amounts of time where you really try to concentrate as best you can.
Meanwhile, from a different line entirely, it might well be seen that you can build your own particular version of technology that might assist you. And there's a Build a Robot competition that's been put together as well. So would you like to just share with us how that connects? So are we saying Build a Robot, replace the teacher?
Absolutely not. You can't replace your teacher. You can't replace your family. But you can have some fun. And this is what this type of competition allows you to do. And use, you know, think about tech in a positive way. What, you know, you might be frustrated at the moment, but tech is all around us. And Currys PC World, they're running the competition for children 13 and under. And it's a chance for families to get involved. You know, thinking about what's around you, what you can use. You don't have to have any fancy equipment to be able to do this. And I really think about what a robot is and begin to build that and think about, sorry.
No, that's fine. Again, just getting a handle, presumably, on how a robot actually sort of works and how you can creatively put it together. Just it would be there, and I think could be the inspiration for a whole variety of other folk from that point of view. Lorna, in general, would you say that the prognosis is good for our homeschoolers? I mean, it's fair to say that there might well be positives. And in fact, there have been cases of people who have actually found it to be quite positive. And certainly for children who might have not necessarily had some of the additional social anxieties that they might have been faced with, obviously, in the classroom, which, of course, may well return as and when the system changes.
Yes, and we've done some research on this with questionnaires at different points in the lockdown. And that's a really interesting factor because it has lifted the lid on some of the unhappiness that some children feel, and being home can feel a safe, being at home can feel a safer place for them. But I think that this is something that we can talk about with young people and find better ways for them to be able to negotiate those relationships in school as well. So, you know, there are some advantages that the children have been feeling for sure.
Absolutely. I'm just thinking whether we could actually apply a similar design, a robot competition, to some of our undergraduates as well, who are having their own challenges in universities ranging from Lincoln through to Liverpool, no doubt. But in terms of finding out further information, where would you suggest people should actually go, Lorna, to find out details about the survey and indeed the Build a Robot competition for under 13s?
Yes, if you go to www.curries.co.uk/do-the-robot, you'll find information there. And it really is a good thing to get into. The thing about creativity is that it really unlocks your mind and it takes you away from the everyday and, just enjoy it, just have fun.
I love the line, do the robot. I'm sure Peter Crouch would very much appreciate that, but that's for another time and another place entirely in terms of robotic dancers and such like. For the moment, Lorna Bork, Principal Lecturer at the Department of Psychology at Liverpool Hope University. Many thanks indeed. Take care now.
Thank you. You too.